This episode of It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine was made possible by contributions from slaves like you. Thank you very much.
He's a marketing dream. But like Calvin Klein or Benetton, he's a brand that promises something special, something exciting, almost risque, as if he might be radical, as if he might enact change. He makes people feel good. He's a postmodern man with no political baggage, and all that's fake.
It's the end of the world as we know it. I feel fine.
Good morning, slaves, and welcome to another edition of It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine, where elevating the discourse is our lowest priority. I am your host, the Stimulator, and the smackdown you just heard comes courtesy of John Pilger. And no, he was not making a eulogy for Jacko. Mr. Pilger is an Australian filmmaker who puts that fat fuck Michael Moore to shame. More recently, Mr. Pilger produced The War on Democracy, an in-depth look at the continued war that the pinche imperialista gringos hijo de la puta que los parió have been waging on my Latino brothers and sisters for more than a century. Let's hear a little more from that master of disaster.
During his brief period in the Senate, Obama voted to continue the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. He voted for the Patriot Act. He refused to support a bill for single-payer health care. He supported the death penalty. He received more corporate backing than John McCain. He promised to close Guantanamo as a priority, but instead he's excused torture, reinstated military commissions, kept the Bush gulag intact, and opposed habeas corpus.
Oh, snack. This is just too fucking easy. Now, for most of you who watch the show religiously, none of this is new. But people are always asking me to provide them with tools to wake up their family and friends from their opium-induced buzz. Pilger's entire speech will be linked from my fucking website, stimulator.tv. Here's another little nugget.
In Colombia, he is planning to spend $46 million on a new military base that will support a regime backed by death squads and further the tragic history of Washington's intervention in that region.
It appears that that cock-nosed dick-fuck that your mama calls Obama is going to continue in the time-honored presidential tradition of shitting on Latin America. Obama and his crew are ramping up U.S. military presence in Colombia to supposedly fight drug cartels, but if our coke-sniffing president was really serious about fighting narco-traffic, he would simply dissolve the CIA.
Men who were working for the CIA's army were responsible for bringing all that cocaine into Los Angeles that sparked the crack epidemic.
President Obama, I want to express our gratitude again to you, to your cabinet, and to the United States.
That groveling suck-up is Colombian President Álvaro Uribe, who, after residing in Obama's butthole, emerged with a promise of American military pilots, aircraft, and intelligence support. This deal will give the U.S. access to 7 military bases and a strategic presence for when they decide to take out Hugo, Evo, Rafael, and Fernando. You see, while George W. Bush was busy killing brown babies over in Iraq, my peeps down south were cleaning house and getting rid of the ruling classes that for years sucked Washington's cock and permitted the wholesale slaughter of any opposition to American imperialism. One of these cleaners is Ecuador's President Rafael Correa, who did not renew the lease of an Air Force base in the city of Manta. When asked why he did not want the Americans to rocket from Ecuador from now on, El Señor Correa responded,
Porque sí. Why renew it? Mire, si quiere, yo lo renuevo con una condición.
Now, if you'd like, I would renew it with one condition.
Que me permitan poner una base militar ecuatoriana aquí en Nueva York.
That they allow me to set up an Ecuadorian military base here in New York.
Meanwhile, in Honduras, people have been hitting the streets nonstop to oppose the coup that forced democratically elected President Manuel Zelaya to flee the country. The motherfucking resistance has been met with hardcore police violence, including allegations of gang rapes. But the Obama administration remains mum on the issue. Also silent are the thousands of fuckheads who tweeted till their fingers bled during the disputed Iranian election. Or could it be that the puppet masters have already found a way to fuck with Twitter?
The use of Twitter is a very important one, not only to the Iranian people, but now increasingly to people around the world.
On the other side of the world, the annual climate camp descended on London, ground zero for global capitalism. activists blocked the entrance of the carbon exchange to protest the commodification of the global warming gas in an action they called Climate Casino. The troublemakers are accusing the carbon traders with gambling with the planet's future.
For weeks, the city's been preparing for the G20 summit, a gathering of world leaders discussing the economic crisis. And like previous summits, anarchists are expected to show up in large numbers.
Yep, it's that time again to make trouble for the 20 gangsters of the industrialized world. This time, our so-called rulers will be descending upon Pittsburgh, but the motherfucking resistance will be there. Patrick Young of the Pittsburgh Organizing Group explains some of the reasons why we must oppose these evil capitalists.
They've created this bubble that has led to the worst financial crisis in our lifetimes, my lifetime and your lifetime. We're seeing unemployment go through the roof. We're seeing people across the country and around the world lose their homes.
But residents of the Steel City have other more sinister things to fear.
Protesters carrying gas masks and PCP pipe.
Your mind. Politics needs human beings. Politics needs lies. That's why, my friend, it's an evidence. Politics is violence. Why, my friend, it's an evidence. Politics is violence.
It has been a year since the combined clusterfucks of the Republican conventions in Denver and St. Paul's. The resistance accomplished much during these rebellions, and many were inspired by how far a little bit of good planning can go to cause big headaches to those in power. In Vancouver, where I live, corporatists have hijacked the city and are holding a big fiasco that they call the Winter Olympics. I call them
the Five Cock Rings of Death.
A call-out has been issued for troublemakers of all stripes to come and oppose this festival of nationalism and corporate rule. But the tricky part is convincing y'all to oppose an event that's supposed to promote goodwill and sportsmanship. It's like asking someone to oppose Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny. To dispel these myths of Olympic proportions, I bring you Gord Hill of No2010.com and a member of the Olympic Resistance Movement. Hey Gord, how the fuck are you?
I'm doing good, thank you.
So, what the fuck are the Olympics?
The Olympics are a huge multi-billion-dollar industry that's, you know, the governments and corporations working hand in hand to make more money and at the expense of the poor and the environment.
Is it true that there is a long history of fascism within the Olympics?
Yeah, if you look at the history of the modern Olympic, Avery Brundage, he was one of the most well-known Nazi sympathizers in the U.S. Olympic Committee, and he ended up becoming an IOC president. Samaranch, who was one of the last long-term IOC presidents, he was a part of Franco's fascist regime in Spain. And then you had the Nazi Olympics, where, you know, it basically bolstered the Nazi regime, and that's where they got the idea for the torch relay to promote Nazi fascism throughout Western Europe. And then you had the Mexico City Olympics, where there was a massacre just days before the Olympic Games on the part of the Mexican government to ensure that there was a peace and order during the Olympic Games. You know, there was like over 300 people, mostly students, shot and killed by the Mexican military and police. And then you look at some of the other games as well, where they've allied themselves with the most authoritarian military regimes in Asia, the most recent one being Beijing, and then before that there was the South Korea, which was in the midst of a military dictatorship when they were awarded the games.
So are the Olympics a Trojan horse to insert fascism into Vancouver?
Yeah, I think if you look at the you know, the pattern of Olympic Games, these types of big mass spectacles, it's like a catalyst for social change in those areas where they set up. With the Olympics, you see the pattern of large-scale restructuring of urban areas, which results in the relocation, the dislocation, the dispersal of poor, low-income people and housing especially. Then you have the establishment of a large security state to secure the games, which is usually large budgets for police and military. Some of the most recent games, like Athens and Beijing, you know, a huge security apparatus that was set up. 300,000 CCTV video cameras in Beijing, a whole network of informants, the same in Athens, the same in all the other cities that have held these games as well. The BC government and their corporate backers are looking at the Olympics as a means of opening up the province and the region to greater international investment, especially in certain industries like mining, oil and gas, and tourism. So that's why the ruling class of a city want the games to come in, because it acts as this kind of catalyst for economic development, and the police and that, they want it because it inflates their budgets and that. So you have this like little network of people, including people involved in land development, condos, these types of industry, that they're the ones who are on the bid committees, for example, who organize and compete with other cities to get the Olympic Games into their respective cities. So if you just look at who comprises the bid committees and the local organizing committees, you'll always find the same types of characters.
What the fuck is the Olympic Resistance Network?
The Olympic Resistance Network, or the ORN, is comprised of a number of different community, grassroots, political organizations that have organized themselves to oppose the Olympic Games.
The slogan for the ORN is, "No Olympics on Stolen Native Land." Just what the fuck does that mean?
Well, here in BC in particular, it refers to the history of colonialism here in the province and the lack of treaties that the government was required by its own laws to make in its western expansion across Canada. So if you go back to the British had put in place a 1763 Royal Proclamation after they had defeated France and they had to reorganize their North American colony. So the 1763 Royal Proclamation legally bound the British to make treaties as they expanded westward. And this is what they did. If you look at the history of Canada, you have these treaties, Treaty No. 1, Treaty No. 2, they're called the numbered treaties that encompass parts of Ontario and the provinces, you know, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Alberta. Vast tracts of land that were ceded in these treaties in exchange for, food and stuff like this. So when they got to BC, which was just forming itself as a colony at that time under the British, they started to make treaties. The first ones are known as the Douglas Treaties, after the first governor. And he made a number of small treaties on Vancouver Island. And then after that, they just stopped the process and just imposed government control over all these indigenous lands here in the province. So when we say there's no Olympics on stolen native land, it's to raise people's awareness and consciousness about this history, about the lack of treaties, and which really challenges the legal basis for the governance here in the province, because what we're saying is like it's illegal and it's actually immoral, because they were bound by their own laws to make treaties before they settled on any land or any business took place on sovereign indigenous lands.
What future actions are planned to disrupt this bullshit?
So the Olympic torch relay is going to begin October 30th, and it's going to start from Victoria. Then it's going to travel up Vancouver Island, and then it's going to go up into northern Canada and cross over to the east coast, and then start again on land and cross over back to Vancouver for February 12th, 2010. It's one of the largest land torch relays, one of the longest in the Olympic history. And so we are organizing to disrupt the torch relay, beginning with its send-off in Victoria. And we're calling on people in other communities where the relay passes through to also challenge it, oppose it, disrupt it if possible. Most recently, representatives from the Four Host First Nations, which are the native collaborator sellouts, we're in Six Nations, Ontario, trying to gather support for the torch relay passing through that community. And they were challenged there also by, an indigenous comrades there. So we're hoping that you know, as in 2008 when the international torch relay was being conducted for China, the Beijing Games, you know, it was massively disrupted because of China's invasion of Tibet at that time, the violence that was occurring there. But we're hoping to disrupt the torch relay based on the same kind of principles, you know, anti-colonial, anti-capitalist resistance.
Thanks, Gord. And that about does it for this edition of It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine. The following slaves chipped in to help fund this edition: Christine, Cillian, Michael, Kim, Weston, and Stuart. Kopupa. To comment on this show or for links on the Olympic resistance, just visit my fucking website, stimulator.tv. Now go get yourself a super soaker.
Remember, kids, you can podcast high-quality video of this show at submedia.tv. We'll be right back.